Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Beyer. I'm here today with our guest, Stephanie Seneff, who is a senior research scientist at MIT, here to talk to us today about the benefits of organic gardening and the dangers of chemical-based agriculture. So welcome to our show, Stephanie. We're so excited to have you here.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
And I guess let's just get right to it. So tell us a little bit about, tell our audience a little bit about yourself, like, you know, how long have you been at MIT and what you research there, I guess,
to begin okay. with? Okay, sure. Yeah, no, so I've been at MIT basically all my adult life, starting as an undergraduate. I majored in biology as an undergraduate. I have a PhD in computer science and electrical engineering from MIT, and I've worked at MIT all my adult life. So, you know, 40 years or something like that.
Oh, my goodness.
I love MIT, actually. It's certainly my home. And MIT's been very good to me. So my research for most of my career was in building spoken dialogue systems to help people gain access to information sources on the web. And about 8 years ago, I kind of morphed it into something a little different, which was really just based on medical information and pesticides, toxic chemicals in the environment, sort of building systems that can help people, researchers, patients, clinicians, gain access to information and be able to look at that information in interesting ways to try to understand correlations and things like that. And at the same time, became very, very interested in the biological mechanisms of toxic chemical effects on the body. Mostly with the goal of trying to understand what's causing the autism epidemic in America, which was really my driver behind this switch in my career because of my concern about the rising rates of autism over time. It's an exponential growth pattern, which will project to 2032 when, if it grows exponentially as it has since 1975, we will have half the children born in 2032 with autism, diagnosed on the autism spectrum. I consider that to be a disaster looming, and so therefore I've become very focused on the question of what's causing this epidemic, and I believe that I have the answer. And the answer sits squarely with the way we do agriculture, the way we grow food, because of the yes.
I was just going to say, I'm so glad you're here to share this with us. As a teacher, I've been teaching elementary school for almost 10 years now. I've worked with lots of autistic kids, and I just think this is going to be incredible value for our audience to hear what you have to say and to share this information. So go ahead and tell us a little more about your solution or how you came about this.
Yes. I mean, I started about 8 years ago really looking at all the chemicals in the environment. And, you know, since I'm a computer scientist, looking at numbers, looking at which chemicals are going up in exposure risk in step with the increase in autism. And the one that matches beautifully and far better than anything else I've found is glyphosate, which is the active ingredient in the pervasive herbicide Roundup. And Roundup is used, you know, not just, of course, in the chemical agriculture, but also on the lawns to control weeds. There, people can go to the hardware store and buy it. It has no protection. It's not regulated. It's considered to be extremely safe for humans, and people use it carelessly because they think it's safe. This makes it especially dangerous.
And so are there no label on the Roundup that says that you should be careful? Are there specific ways you should read? Is there even a safe way to use it? Or I wouldn't think people should be using Roundup at all.
I know. No, I'm sure I have never used it. I won't allow it on my lawn. I'm very proud of myself that I never did, even before I knew how dangerous it is, because I just don't like toxic chemicals. You know, anything that kills weeds. Roundup kills all plants. It also kills many microbes. And it is very damaging to animals in studies that have been done. It's insidious because if you study it for 3 months, say rat exposure at sort of expected levels, environmental levels for 3 months, you don't see any obvious problems. The problems start to appear at 4 months. And by the end of the lifespan, the rats have, you know, liver damage, kidney damage, reproductive issues, mammary tumors, shortened life. So it causes a lot of damage insidiously over time. And therefore, it's difficult to connect the dots and to realize that it's the thing that's causing all the diseases. But on the other hand, it's going up in step with not just autism, but a huge number of other diseases, including obesity, by the way. There's a corner on the obesity curve. It's sort of slowly going up to 1975, and then there's a corner where it starts to go up at a much more accelerated rate, the obesity rate in this country. 1975 is when they introduced glyphosate into the food chain. And I think the glyphosate is a major contributor to the obesity epidemic, along with diabetes, pancreatic cancer, thyroid cancer, all kinds of gut dysbiosis problems, autism, ADHD, Alzheimer's. I mean, there's a very big list of diseases that are going up at an alarming rate right now, and that I'm working towards explaining them one by one on the basis of what glyphosate does to biological systems. So it's quite stunning. You get this very strong correlation, and you get the understanding of why it works biophysically and biochemically in the body, why it would do the things that you observe in association with these diseases. And autism is a great choice to study because it's a very complex disorder with many different features. And so you can take those features one by one and say, how could glyphosate cause this? And usually you can find the answer.
And also, so many more kids are being diagnosed with autism every year.
Right.
Almost everybody knows somebody who has some, at least one person, I would think, that, or one family, that has a child growing up with autism. And,
Right. Well, when you take the CDC data, and they've put out numbers every few years since 1975, and when you look at them, if you're familiar with math at all, you'll see that it's an exponential shape. When you take the log, it's a straight line. You can show that on the graph. And you just extend that line. That's how you get 2032 as the date when half the kids, by the quarter century mark, it'll be a quarter of the kids if we stay the course. But I actually think it's worse than that because the numbers that they're quoting, 1 in 68, is 12-year-olds who were who were in utero in 2001. At that time, only 10% of the corn crop was GMO Roundup ready. For several years now, it's been 100%. They have runaway weeds that they can't control, so they're now giving approval for engineering the crops not only to be resistant to Roundup, but also to be resistant to other very dangerous herbicides like dicamba and 2,4-D. So we're going to have multiple resistant corn and soy crops being grown, which is going to end up with multiple toxic chemicals on our dinner plate very soon with the way things are going. It is an escalating war against the weeds that we cannot win. And this is why I feel we have to go back to organic methods. We need to find efficient ways to grow food organically. And we also have to worry about the soil. Right now, we are ruining the soil. We're depleting it of its microbes. We're depleting it of its minerals with this glyphosate. And the chemical-based fertilizers are another piece of the puzzle. For example, the phosphate fertilizers are producing toxic fluoride gas that has to be. We've come up with a solution of poisoning everybody in the drinking water by distributing that fluoride over all the cities of the country, claiming that that's going to help fight cavities. But fluoride is a very toxic molecule atom that is also poisoning us as a consequence of the phosphate fertilizers because it's a byproduct. I mean, that's just one other example of the problems that go with the chemical basis of farming. Also, of course, manure is actually a very healthy and useful resource for improving the soil. When you put the cows out on the grass, the cows eat the grass. The grass actually benefits from the cows eating it, and it benefits from the manure that the cows provide in return. And this makes the carbon, it binds the carbon into the soil as well as the nitrogen. And carbon and nitrogen are both major problems in the greenhouse gases that are causing global warming. So when you take the cows off the grass, you put them in the CAFOs, you feed them toxic chemicals because they have this very high residue limits on their corn and soy feed that is GMO Roundup ready crops. They're getting tremendous exposure to glyphosate. They're getting sick. And then they're producing manure that's toxic, which is getting into the waterways and causing algal growth and things like that. So we've got a real
It's a
mixed up
big
system,
cycle.
really mixed up system right now because we're trying to do everything chemically where we should be doing it naturally.
Yeah, I had another guest on who was talking about the how hard it is to find manure that's produced that's chemical free, that where the cows have been fed, healthy, that you're sure that they're being fed organic food. So,
Right.
can I ask that, when you first started talking, I was wondering, so who's in charge? Is it the FDA that's in charge of Roundup, or who regulates that's letting
EPA.
them put this, Really?
EPA,
The
yeah.
Environmental Protection Agency.
Yeah.
And they don't see any cause to put any regulations on this on our food. Like the Roundup company is so powerful that they're lobbying them to do this or something,
Pretty
or?
much, pretty much. Yeah. So Monsanto is the company that patented
Oh, of course.
Roundup many decades ago. And they claimed to have done adequate studies to show that glyphosate is safe. Their studies are woefully inadequate, in my opinion. First of all, they have this rule: you only have to run for 3 months if you're going to do an animal study. And as I told you, it takes 4 months before you see anything. So you do the 3 month animal
I
study,
wouldn't
okay,
even
that
think
checks fine.
that would be long enough. I would think it would be like a year or years
You
worth
almost
of.
wonder if they defined it as 3 months because they noticed that in 4 months they started to see trouble. I would not be surprised, you know. I mean, it's just like they so want to get this approved because they know there's so much money in it. And then they've got these Roundup Ready crops. These are engineered with a bacterial gene inserted into them. And they have done this to the core crops of the processed food industry: the corn, the soy, the canola, the sugar beets, the alfalfa, cotton, and tobacco. These are all engineered to be resistant to Roundup so that they don't die. They're the only plants that don't die when exposed to glyphosate. It should be a hint that it kills all plants, that it might not be exactly, you know,
Right.
harmless for humans.
I
And
know.
yeah, it's they claim that it works by the other thing they do. So they say 3 months, you know, no problem. They say also you have to study. This is a definition of how their protocol definition of what you need to do to pass approval. This is already broken. You know, they say you only have to study the active ingredient in isolation. So they study, for example, in vitro studies or in studies of microbes, they use glyphosate, the pure glyphosate. But glyphosate is actually mixed into a product that has other things in there that are, in some cases, at least as toxic, maybe even more toxic, and that make glyphosate much more toxic than it would otherwise be. So, for example, Roundup has these surfactants in it. They have these glyphosate salts that they've introduced really since about 2005. And the salts are probably potassium oxalate, although I can't confirm that because it's under patent protection. But they do have patents saying that oxalate makes glyphosate much more toxic to the plants than it would otherwise be. So they're happy to throw the oxalate in, no problem. The EPA says we don't even have to know whether that's going to change the toxic behavior of the chemical. You know, we don't need to know that. You just go ahead and do that, that's fine. So
Why does the
it's
EPA say
crazy to me.
that?
I don't know why. I mean, it's just they're naive or they're
Oh.
eager to, or they think that if we
The,
don't have chemical-based agriculture, we'll all starve. I mean, I'm not sure why. It puzzles me, frankly.
that's so interesting. I just recorded my introductory episode, and I was talking about how one of the reasons I got interested in all this to start was way back at, like, I first learned when I got a subscription to Organic Gardening Magazine, and I had read an article about their test gardens that they have. They have like this trial garden where they compare or chemical conventional farming techniques next to organic techniques year for year. They've been doing this, I think, since 1941, it said.
Wow.
And so every year they have the science and they have the proof that, you know, under ideal conditions, when you have exactly the perfect amount of sun and the perfect amount of rain, you might get more. You're gonna get a bigger product from the chemical using the fertilizers. But any other kind of conditions, when you have drought or, you know, not the perfect, you know, amount of the right temperature, and especially living in Montana, you know, we always have to deal with frosts. That the organic would produce better every time,
Right, I've
and.
seen pictures, you know, in a drought situation. Don Huber has done this. Don Huber is an expert on glyphosate and a retired professor from Purdue University, expert on plant pathology and glyphosate. And he's very, very concerned about glyphosate. And I've seen photos that he's produced of two fields of maybe soy. I think it's soy, side by side. The left field is organic. The right field is chemical based GMO. And it's a drought condition, and the right field is all brown, and the left field is green. You know, it's just that they don't hold up well under drought conditions. And I think they're also probably vulnerable to more vulnerable to fungus infection. Then you
Sure.
have to use fungicides. So you end up with a chemical warfare approach to agriculture, which is crazy because you're going to eat that food eventually, and you won't know
Right.
what kind of chemicals are in that food because they're also very casual about testing it. This is the other area that I blame them for, the government, that they're not adequately testing the food to see if it's actually in there.
They
And
don't. Oh,
Very
that's.
little, very little. They did in 2011, agriculture, the U.S. Department of Agriculture put out a 200 or 300 page document, and there was one line on the use of on the herbicides in the testing in the food. One line. So glyphosate is by far the most used herbicide in this country, and they only had one line devoted to glyphosate, which was soy, in the whole document. And they had 300 samples of soy, and over 91% of them tested positive for glyphosate. 96% tested positive for AMPA, which is a breakdown product of glyphosate that's also toxic. So basically, it's all over the soy. That's all we know
And
because
there's
that's the only thing
soy
they
in a lot
tested.
of things that people probably don't even realize they're
Right.
eating.
Well, that's the thing. Soy is a source of cheap protein. And soy has other issues too because they use hexane to separate out the oil from the protein. Hexane is also toxic, and we don't have any kind of regulatory restrictions on hexane.
And I think
So,
part of the problem is people always feel like, oh, well, if it's on the shelves, then the government, they have this kind of blind belief that our government protects us and they wouldn't let you wouldn't be able to have it on the shelf if it wasn't safe. And so
yes,
they just, kind of think, well, if it's there, it must be okay. And
we do have an amazing confidence in our government to that they wouldn't let this happen, would they? And I think that's why many people feel that what I'm saying can't possibly be true. There's a level of disbelief
Oh,
in
yeah.
when people hear what I'm saying because they just don't think our government would let this happen. And they
And
think that our government is looking out for our health, but it's not, you know. It's looking out for the chemical companies and the wealth that's involved in that.
right, absolutely. And I think people also like things have changed and they don't realize that, back in the 70s, our food was and there was maybe more regulation going on and that now, food isn't produced the way it used to be, and you could buy, conventional. You didn't have to buy organic. Like so many people think, oh, it's just a hoax. Oh, you have to have
I
organic food because
know.
it's more expensive. And they,
That's another thing
because
that,
we
you
grew
know.
up, so many times I hear, oh, we grew up eating all that food and we're fine. And
Right.
I just try to be like,
They
well,
think it's the
food's
same as
grown
it was then,
differently.
and it's certainly not, because when you look at the use of glyphosate on corn and soy crops, it's actually the only thing, and thank goodness they do provide this information on the web. It's all freely downloadable by anybody, by the way, the information that I've been studying. And the glyphosate usage on corn and soy crops has skyrocketed in the past 15 years. You can just look at the plots. And it's, of course, exactly matched with the rise in autism. It's a perfect correlation, like 0.997.
Oh my goodness. So, do you have anything you want to say to our audience to kind of suggest like things that they can do to maybe change this? Either reaching out to, do they need to reach out to public officials, do you think? Or is it just
Yes,
like
no,
with
I
their
think
purchasing
anybody's
power, not buying certain
right.
products or?
Perfect, yes. And of course, GMO labeling, I mean, that's been such a fight.
Right?
And
How
they
crazy is
just,
that?
it is. And I'm very proud here in Hawaii, where I am now, the Maui Miracle, which is such a sweet story. And they got a bill on the ballot to ban GMOs in Maui. And they were outspent 90-1 by the opposition, and they won. They
Wow.
won the bill passed despite a 90-1 excess, $90 to every $1 spent on the opposite side. So it's a miracle. Of course, now they're getting lawsuits. It's not actually happening. The ruling was that it was a moratorium on GMOs until they do testing to see if, in fact, it's not affecting the health of the population. So it's going to involve testing, which is awesome because we'll actually be able to see for sure whether, we'll get a chance to get
Right.
some hard numbers rather than just, if you're just talking about correlations between autism in the country and GM and glyphosate usage on corn and soy in the country, that's a very, very vague link, you know?
Right.
And so you need the direct hit that the people who are living near the fields where they're spraying this stuff are sicker in certain ways that make sense, you know? So you have to really do the research. But they're declaring a moratorium until they can do the research to see if, in fact, these chemicals are not causing harm to the population.
So let me just make sure I'm understanding. So the moratorium would be on food that's actually grown in Hawaii
Girl,
or any food
yes.
that's imported there that they're eating?
They'll go ahead and still be happy to eat the GMO Roundup Ready corn and soy because it won't be labeled, and they'll just go ahead and import it, but they won't be allowed to grow it because they're concerned about the exposure. I mean, of course, there's exposure in the food, and there's also exposure in the air, exposure in the water. And I have not yet figured out which factors are more important in terms of our health failure. You know, they're all contributing, but I don't know the
And
relative
also, like the
risk.
bees that are spreading the pollen and transferring the food, I'm sure it's affected.
The bees are affected. The bees, of course, are dying, you know, from this colony collapse syndrome. And I'm just about certain that glyphosate is playing a role in that. Glyphosate disrupts the enzyme, the SIPE enzymes in the liver that the bees use to detoxify neonicotinoids. So what happens is glyphosate makes the neonicotinoids much more toxic to the bees than they would otherwise be. So when the bees are hit by both of those chemicals together, they can't make it. I mean, it just basically collapses the colony. They get, I think, what I would call bee autism, actually,
So, sorry, so I kind of interrupted you. So did you have some suggestions for what you would like? Go ahead.
Organic. Of course, my husband and I, we have a few things growing in our yard here in Hawaii, a little bit of fruit. But I'm not a gardener. I wish I were. I actually think if I could settle down in one place. Right now we're in transition between two homes, so it's difficult to grow a garden at either place. But I would encourage anybody who has land to grow their own food to the extent that that's possible. I think we really need to do that because I believe there's going to be a real run on organic once people wake up and figure this out. Right now, for me personally, I can buy organic. It's lovely here in Kauai. We have organic grocery stores in little bitty towns in the North Shore of Kauai with organic grocery stores. We buy everything we buy for our kitchen is organic. When we go out, it's harder, of course. It's very difficult still to find an organic restaurant. So we eat in. We mostly eat in. And I
I
would
don't know that
encourage
I've ever
people.
heard of an organic restaurant. That's a great idea.
There are some. And in fact, there was one here in Kauai, but unfortunately they've closed. So we no longer have that option.
I mean, I guess there's like health food stores I know that have like salad bars and things that probably have are organic produce
Yes.
and things like that there, but
What I'm
like an
thinking will
actual
happen, just
restaurant.
like they have now, increasingly they'll say, like, you know, gluten free, here's a gluten free choice, or here's a low fat choice, you know, on the menu. They'll probably have, here's an organic choice. They'll start doing that once they realize that so many people want organic.
That's
You know,
interesting.
restaurants will start offering that, I suspect.
A lot of people that I've talked to, like trying to sell what extra produce we have organically to like the health food store, talking to other or like larger organic farms, they've suggested to people that want to get into that, but or people that grow their own gardens and have a little bit of extra produce, instead of trying to go to a store, the place to go to is a restaurant because restaurants are more likely to
Right. That's a
buy
great
what's
idea.
fresh and what's in season, you know,
I
and a
love
little
that because
easier
you.
than a farmer's market. So that might
Yes.
help our listeners, you know,
That
get
would be
some ideas
awesome.
going there.
Yeah, if you're growing your own food and then you end up with too much at times, you just can't. If you have a way, an outlet for it that can give it to a restaurant, that would be fantastic. A good way to distribute the food. Of course, the farmers markets are awesome. We're fortunate to have a farmers market in Boston where we go, but also here in Kauai, there are many farmers markets. And some of them are organic. We always ask, but you can get
You're
organic, of
right, and
course.
that's an important thing that people don't realize. They think, "Oh, I'm going to a farmer's market, automatically it's going to be organic." But it's true that you do have to ask and make sure where the food is coming from and what the farms, you know,
And I
practices
would
are.
encourage people to ask frequently and repeatedly, because if you keep asking them, is it organic? And then they say no and you walk away, they will eventually get the hint, oh my God, it had better be organic or I'm not going to be able to sell this, you know? And
I
people
wish
need
our
to.
stores would get more that way too.
I
And I
know,
think then
well.
that would bring the price down. I still have a hard time understanding exactly why organic food is
Right.
cost more. I mean, I understand there's a little more damage sometimes, and transferring it is, you know, transporting it is hard to keep it. But, you know, at
I
the same
always thought it
time,
would be
when
more
people are eating
expensive to
watermelon in the middle of winter, I just look and shake my head in Montana.
Right, if you get expect to get this non-local food. I would expect it to be more expensive to grow, but I could be wrong. I mean, I would think that if you have to actually pull the weeds or, you know, deal with the weeds in some other way besides just pouring a chemical on them, that it would probably be more expensive, I would think. But maybe
Yeah,
I'm
then you got to
wrong.
buy the chemicals. And then you have to have a way to, I don't know, to me
Yeah, the chemicals cost money, that's true. So
it's a no-brainer, but you know, we're very small scale still, so
Yeah. And I'm sure some foods are easier than others, and therefore we should eat those foods. I mean, basically, because to think that we should be eating these ridiculous processed foods that are all soy and corn and canola, that's making us unhealthy all by itself, because those are extremely non-nutritious foods, especially when they're grown chemically. One of the things glyphosate does is deplete the minerals. And so you end up with mineral deficiencies, and mineral deficiencies are really a huge problem in health.
And that probably is also, like you were talking about in the beginning, a link to obesity and diabetes.
Yes, I think so. In fact, in some sense, you know, you might imagine that obesity is simply because you have to eat a lot more calories to get sufficient micronutrients, because the food is not nutrient dense.
That's so important, right? And I think a lot of people don't think about that.
Yeah, you need to eat foods that are nutrient dense if you want to stay thin.
Absolutely. Okay, so is there anything else that you want to talk about today or tell our listeners before we kind of, finish up here?
Yeah, well, basically, you know, go organic, tell your friends to go organic, tell your family to go organic, get that message out, and try. Hopefully people have some information from what I've said and what from so many other people are saying these days, why it is important to eat organic food. And you will actually save money in the end, because you will avoid illness. And of course, being sick is not pleasant. So you also, you feel much better. You have much more energy. You're happier. These are all very good reasons to eat organic food, you know, and people just need to recognize that this is the case in order to be persuaded to, at the moment, spend extra money in order to get the organic food. And of course, grow your own if you have the capability. I think that's an extremely important message. Anybody who has a piece of land where they can grow food, figure out what they love and put it in there and grow it, you know?
And that's the whole reason we started this podcast, is to share knowledge and tips and kind of like, you know, so people can kind of get that neighborhood gardener feel, to learn how to make it easier for people. Because I'm actually like, I struggle with garden. My husband's a gardener. I can barely keep anything alive, and I'm better with flowers than vegetables. But he amazes me still to this day, like how he puts those tiny pepper seeds in the ground, and then here's a pepper plant, and then on top of that, it produces peppers and broccoli,
it's wonderful, isn't it? It must be very inspiring, you know.
It is, and I've learned, and I think if I had to do it now, I could, you know, certainly grow food. Certainly 10 years ago, there was no way I could possibly do it, but I've definitely come a long way and learned a lot from watching him all this time. But, it's not as hard and complicated as I certainly thought. It takes a little bit of commitment and, you know, dedication, making sure your soil doesn't dry up, and, you know, the consistent watering and little bit of weeding. Because we have very limited water at my house. He doesn't have as many weeds, because the water goes right to the roots. Like he's very specific about where he waters. And so I think that helps us a lot with our weeds. Like
That's
we can't
really
just
great.
Squirt yeah. water and, you know, do a whole area. And so we have a lot less weeds, I think, than other people, because
that's really interesting, because if you can control the water supply and then just keep it dry every place else except where the plant is, right?
Right, exactly.
That's neat. Yeah, it would be fun. Yeah. I mean, in my next life, I'm going to be a gardener. I think it would be fun, and I kind of regret that I didn't.
Well, you have time. You never know. So
I know once I retire and get one place, I can do something. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So
wonderful.
Well, thank you so much, Stephanie, for coming on today and sharing your incredible knowledge with our audience. And I think they're just going to have learned a bunch today. I know a lot of our listeners are going to be really surprised, and I think it'll be a little different show than what I've been doing my other shows. And I just have a great weekend, I guess, and wish
you
the best.
You too.
Thanks.
Thank you for all that you do.
Aw, thanks, Stephanie. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Organic Gardener Podcast. If you like what you've heard today, we'd love it if you'd head over to iTunes and give us a 5-star review. It really helps us get found by other listeners and share the knowledge. Thank you again for listening, and have a great day.